Today's episode of Rob Has a Podcast is sponsored by iCracked. iCracked provides iPhone repair that comes to you. It's more amazing than a chicken that can do tricks to get your iPhone repaired in the comfort of your own home. Now, you might want to find cracks in the Alliance if you're on the outs, but you don't want to find cracks in your iPhone or iPad. That's where iCracked comes in. They're like the Uber of iPhone repair. They're great for busy professionals and businesses who don't have time to wait around or spend hours getting their phone fixed. They've got fast, convenient, professional iPhone repair at the time and location of your choosing, whether it's your home, your office, an animal sanctuary, a coffee shop. They work around your busy schedule, and they've got 5,000 on-demand phone repair technicians in over 600 cities across the U.S. that are rigorously trained and background checked. So for a limited time, our listeners can get a free tempered glass screen protector with their on-demand repair. That's at iCracked.com/Rob. That's iCracked with an E-D on the end, .com/Rob for a free tempered glass screen protector. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's always the extra person in anybody's alliance, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. I am Rob Cesternino, back here to talk with you about the voicemail feedback for episode number 12 of Survivor Cover On. We've got a really great show tonight. Mike Bloom is going to be joining us to talk about everything that you guys called in to discuss with us about the latest Survivor. So looking forward to that. Always a fun show when Mike is here with us. Of course, we've already done so much after this episode. Survivor Know-It-Alls, had my exit interview with Jason, and our recap podcast with the great Parvati Shallow. That's all up for you guys to check out on robhasawebsite.com. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any of that. And when you subscribe to the podcast, you won't miss any of our upcoming shows, including my interview with the host of Big Brother Canada, Arissa Cox, coming up on Friday. That's at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our voicemail guest for today. All season long, people have been asking me, when are you going to get this guy on the voicemails? Not soon enough for my taste. Here he is. You hear him all over the place, from podcasts like The Survivor Historians to what we're doing on post-show recaps to things on reality TV wrap-ups. Give it up for Mike Bloom.
Is La Cucaracha going to play me in honor of Cinco de Mayo, or do we have to pay Ian Ziering royalties for that?
Might sound crazy, but it's true.
Yes.
Wow, deep pull there. You went back to January 2015 to make that pull. Kudos to you, sir.
You know, Mike, I've you know, joked around about this to varying different degrees, but you know, we have covered the Celebrity Apprentice, and I've covered the Celebrity Apprentice all the way back to season 3 of the Celebrity Apprentice, and I just feel like there's something there. I don't want to do politics. I stay in my lane. I know that there's very few people out there that want to hear me talk anything political, but I just feel like that there is some, I don't know if anybody else is covering the Celebrity Apprentice archives with Donald Trump now being the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party. I don't know what it is, but I feel like there's a podcast in there somewhere.
Completely. I mean, since the new season started filming back in, I think it was February, I've been going through the seasons where I could find them. And it's crazy watching Donald Trump on the show and thinking about where he's going to wind up, including, I think, in the third season, in like the season premiere, he talks about how he met President Obama and how he thinks he's a great guy. And it's just, it's amazing to think about that little snapshot of history compared to where we are now.
I just
now.
Feel like nobody's looking there. And I feel like that there's something important in there. And I don't know what it is, but I don't know. I feel like that maybe at some point this summer, maybe as we approach the convention, we need to take a look at that. But anyway, so we're not here to talk about Celebrity Apprentice. We are here to talk about what is going on Survivor.
Get some Kleenex.
No. Survivor. Okay, so we have a big episode this week. Episode number 12. We have Mike Bloom here to talk about this. We have so many voicemails, social media, the works. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. We're in the nice little fault line of New York City in the spring, in that It's gone from winter, cold, really crappy, and we're about to jump into summer, really hot and smelly. So I feel like we're really hitting the right balance of like 2 weeks in New York time. And I'm actually coming up on my 1 year wedding anniversary.
Oh,
so that's super interesting.
Me. Sweet.
Thank you, Geraldo. You are the staple of a stable marriage. So I'm not sure though what to get for a gift so far. Rob, you have been happily married for 5+ years. Do you have any advice for a gift to get for the first year of blissful marriage?
Well, does your wife have a Jeff Probst cardboard cutout?
You know what? I believe the first year is the paper anniversary. I think Cardboard can cut for paper. I think you might have just filled in my blank there.
So that is going to be very interesting. Now, does your wife watch Survivor?
She does. I got her into it in the middle of Survivor Caramoan, and she's back watched a lot of the seasons, and she's currently watching now as well. So she's a pretty big fan. She's been to all the know-it-alls events that have happened here in New York. So if she wasn't a fan before, she definitely is now at this point, considering she's listening to me in the other room, listening to half of a Survivor conversation.
And not cursing at you.
Not yet, at least.
Yeah.
I haven't checked my phone yet. We'll see how many invectives have been hurled on me by the end of this couple of hours.
See, that I've moved things far enough away where I'm out of earshot of my wife, so she can't hear what I'm saying, so it really does help things around here. Anyway, so Mike, we have a lot to discuss with Survivor Ko Rong and this season. Now, I feel like I haven't talked to you at all about Survivor this season. What's been your take? You, of course, are on the Survivor Historians podcast. You have such a deep knowledge base about the show. What's been your feeling about Ko Rong?
Such a fun season, right? I mean, I might come in with a hot take here, and I don't know if that's going to count me out among some of your listeners, but I actually, depending on how this finishes, I actually might like this better than the first BBB.
Interesting. All right, well, then let's jump into our first voicemail question, because it involves the first Survivor, Blood versus Water. So here is a question from Rachel.
Hi, Rob and Mike. This is Rachel Caper. Is this the best Final Five since Kagyan? With maybe the exception of Joe, everyone left has played a pretty solid game. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this in sort of the big picture, and then let's drill down to the final five. If we're comparing the original BBB and this one, you actually side in favor of the current season.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that has it for me is that I feel like BBB, as much as a great season as it was, I do feel like when you look back on it retrospectively, I mean, Tony and Wu were making all the big flips every other round. Here, I feel like there are a lot more moving pieces. It's almost like, I don't know, trying to eat dinner at an air hockey table, in that you think you're sitting down and you know what's going to be in front of you, but then something else comes sliding in or something slips away from you. Because, you know, while Aubrey might, and Sydney and that coalition might be in control right now, there have been a couple of votes where, you know, Ty has been the swing vote. There have been a couple of votes where Michelle and Julia were the swing votes. And so I feel like if we're talking about things from like an ensemble storytelling perspective, rather than some other seasons that might have a couple of main characters, if you will, and then there's some supporting characters, and then, you know, people filling out the background, I feel like this season more so represents the former than that other season 28. Now, again, when we see everything at the end, it might completely change. Maybe it's a super underwhelming finale, as a lot of people are guessing. But right now, I personally think this is an extremely strong final five, even if Joe Del Campo is suffering a little bit from PMES out there.
What's PMES?
So PMES, if you remember, was the thing that I talked about on our last voicemails podcast for the near the finale of Survivor Cambodia, the pre-merge edit syndrome.
Oh, no.
That theory I came up with, where it was like, there's always at least one person in these modern Survivor seasons where they have no edit for the first like four or so episodes. Then they have a couple of big spikes in visibility right before the merge. Then they're completely flatlining again. And then they pop up for a brief spike of visibility before they leave. I think Mikey the Chimp actually gave it the better title of the EKG edit after that podcast.
Yes.
But if you look at Joe, I mean, he was doing nothing those first 4 weeks outside of arguing with Anna that one time. Then he had the whole Peter thing, which brought a little bit of relevancy to him. Then he completely disappears behind the scenes. He's back. First 20 minutes of this past episode, he's being a grumpy Gus, talking about the fire, being the worst combination of Butch and Tom Westman that there ever was, shouting at props during the challenge. And so it might be squared up for him to go soon. But that being said, I feel like he's lulzy enough that he still kind of makes this final five great.
I hear what you're saying about everything with Joe, But I have to say that I've been a huge proponent of this season, but I have to say I love Survivor Kageyan so much. It's one of my top five baby seasons. You have everything going on with Tony and just that dynamic with Tony and Spencer and Cass, all of that great stuff. And, you know, even going down to the end of the, you know, did Wu make the worst decision ever? There's so much there. There's so much meat there, Mike.
There's a lot of meat, and we might have a lot of meat coming up as well. It's not like we've been having bread the entire time, filling up on 12 episodes of bread this season. I feel like we definitely are splitting hairs. I mean, if we're going back to Rachel's question, and by the way, Rachel is an awesome contributor to the feedback on the Once Upon a Time post-show recap, so I just want to give her a shout-out there. But if we're going back to her question, you know, counting out Kagayan, do you think this is the best Final Five that we've had, I guess, throughout 29 through 31 at this point?
Are we counting Cambodia?
I mean, I'm assuming we have to, right? We're going chronologically by release date, not necessarily by filming order.
I feel like we have to go in air order. I feel like that you have to. If you're saying original player seasons, if you're saying let's take the All-Stars out of the mix, okay, I'll say sure. If you're saying original player seasons only, if you're going to get into the Cambodia Final Five where we're talking Jeremy, Spencer, Kelly Wentworth, Tasha and Keith, I feel like that. I don't know if we're in that air.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little tough because we've seen all those players for a second time. Though, if we're just comparing the weak links, give me JDC above Tasha and Cambodia any day of the week, personally.
Okay, well, you know, we don't need to split those.
I'm sorry, I didn't want to get on the Tasha haters, but yeah, Tasha had an interesting edit in Cambodia, but we're focusing on Korong right now. But I think no matter what, again, this is an extremely strong Final Five and such an interesting conglomerate as well, right? If you're looking at this cast at the beginning of the season, I don't think any of us really thought that this combination of people would have a shot to win $1 million at the end.
Do you think there's something that is conducive about the brains versus brawn versus beauty format that brought this out, or did Survivor just roll snake eyes two times in a row?
I mean, I think Survivor's great at craps, honestly. I think, you know, you would want to say on paper, oh yeah, of course, you know, these two seasons both had the same theme and they both produced great results, but causality does not necessarily mean correlation here. I think it honestly just comes down to the cast. I think, you know, had you taken a cast from if you took One World's cast and put them on this season, I still don't think you're going to get a fantastic season. I think the way the season came out and the gameplay comes completely from the 18 people playing, not necessarily the structure that the game provides.
So, yeah, I think that the comparison is pretty favorable, though. Do you feel like that anything the next couple of weeks could either increase or decrease that final assessment?
I mean, I guess it depends on if there are sort of fireworks at the end. I mean, I know you just put
like,
Kagayan
do you care up. Who, if, let's say, Joe Del Campo goes on to win this season, does that change your overall picture, or you don't bother with that?
I don't usually bother with that. I'm one that definitely focuses more on what I think about the season as a whole rather than saying, okay, does the end game and the winner really dictate my thoughts on the season? So I personally wouldn't have a problem with it just because we have had such an interesting path to this sort of weird final destination, almost like we're looking at the map and not really concentrating on the road. And somehow we wound up in the weird part of town on our way to the Grand Canyon, if you will. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I mean, I've also been a fan of what Josh Wigler and I both call like the train wrecky-esque yes. seasons, Survivor Gabon, Survivor Nicaragua, even a little bit of Survivor San Juan del Sur, just because I feel like it does bring some weird sort of, not necessarily levity, but brings an interesting take on the game of like, hey, you know what? There isn't a tried and true strategy to win. Sometimes these people win for the most quote unquote random reasons. So if Joe did end up somehow winning this season, I think it would just be a weird exclamation mark at the end of a very great sentence.
And for me, the actual winner of the season isn't really the deciding factor for me. I think it's how many episodes did we get some sort of exciting finish or exciting gameplay. For me, I don't really care so much what the final score is as long as it was a good game the whole way through.
Yeah, exactly. And it's been a great game the whole way through. I mean, there were arguably a couple of episodes there around like 4 or 5 that might have been a little contentious and or boring. I know Steven has been a little down on these past two episodes, but I still think, you talk about meat before, it's been as much as Ty doesn't want to eat the meat at the reward challenge, this has been a very meaty post-merge season so far. And so I feel like there's nowhere to go I wouldn't say there's nowhere to go but down, but I feel like with the people that are left in the game, they're all enough of a catalyst that there's still going to be a lot of kinetic gameplay, I feel like.
I don't feel like we talked enough about the greatness of Sydney on the podcast this season, and I feel like that last night was an especially great moment with her. After they come back from that challenge where she was so upset, first off, you know, I think Joe was upset too, that after the challenge, he was even cursing at the inanimate objects in the challenge.
You dumb ball.
Did you like that, Mike, when he called the ball a dumb ball?
Yeah, wasn't that the cousin of the elephant that they saw? It was Dumbo and Dumb Ball, right?
The stretch, Mike.
I'm stretching it out here, Rob. I hope you appreciated the stretch I went, because my back is sore from how much I stretched for that joke.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here was Sydney post-challenge when Joe was really getting on her case about the fire. And there's about like 10 great things in here. This is Sydney.
I'm sitting here trying to get a meal, aka 5 pieces of coconuts down my throat. And apparently I sat down too long and then I had to get up off my butt and find firewood. I was like, ooh. No. I don't care what your struggle is, how tired you are, keep that to yourself.
I love, my favorite part of my Sydney's confessionals are when she says, I was like, because usually when somebody says, I was like, they're trying to do an impression of what they actually said. But so far we've got, I was like, burr, and I was like, ooh. I don't think I remember Sydney being a human sound effects machine in real life as much as she tries to believe she is in confessionals.
Yeah, what's your preference, Mike? Do you like?
I was like, ooh, and I'm like, burr.
Which, are you a ooh or a burr guy?
I'm like burr, just because I feel like the disparity of the cold sound effect and the extremely warm climate and the heat that they've been dealing with in Ko Rong is just too ironic to not be chosen as the better quote.
Well, Mike, if you like heat,
we're in the middle of Ko Rong. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, babies.
I don't know, I forget if you skipped over this part, but I also like how she calls him Mr. Joe.
Yeah, well, she said Miss Debbie, Mr. Joe, that she, everybody gets a Mr. or Mrs.
It's like she's referring to them as like school teachers.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
I was like, ooh.
She's great.
I love how she refers to eating as what, shoving 5 pieces of coconut down her throat. Like, she doesn't even care about chewing at this point. They're a month into it. Teeth are overrated. Yeah. Jason lost like 3 teeth apparently over the course of the game.
Like, she's even sassy like in the beginning of that before she even gets to the point when she's like, oh.
I'm sitting here trying to get a meal, aka 5 pieces of coconuts down my throat. And
that's a meal.
Apparently, she should go into, she should be making lean meals if she's such a, she's really into fitness, right? So I feel like she could go the Jillian Michaels route when she gets out of Survivor and make healthy meals for people that are on diet. Just 5 pieces of coconut every day.
How many branch chain amino acids are in 5 pieces of coconut?
I guess one per piece of coconut, I'm assuming. So 5.
And I'm like, brr.
It'll make you go, ooh.
I was like, ooh.
She's great. She's really been phenomenal in all of these confessionals.
such a fantastic personality, and we really saw it flare up a little bit. I know you said that we really haven't seen Storm come out, but I feel like we've almost seen Storm throughout the course of this game, in that every time, it was really a theme this episode, that every time she's told to do something, she adamantly refuses and does the exact opposite thing. I actually loved that scene that you just described, how it basically set up what Sydney's going to do in about 20 minutes when Ty comes to her and says, Michelle, and she says, Ty, don't tell me what to do. Even though you politely suggested that we do Michelle, I'm going to do me. Let's vote off Jason.
No.
Yeah, she doesn't like it. She doesn't like that idea.
Not at all.
And I do think that one of the issues for her, at least as a player, is that no poker face for Sydney.
Oh, definitely not.
She has a poker face like my wife.
She has I think Anna Kay could probably teach her a couple of lessons. Sydney is basically playing a game where she's dealt the cards. She holds the cards with the faces facing towards everyone and then says like, no, give me your cards. I don't have anything. You give me your cards now.
Yeah. I was at the poker table with Sydney, and immediately I knew something was up when
I was like, ooh.
I fall.
And the air conditioning was on a little too much, so she tapped the assistant over at the casino, and she was trying to impersonate the noise that she was feeling from the air conditioner. I don't know, Robin.
And I'm like,
yeah, that was it. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because I thought it was warm in there.
We're in the middle of Coron. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, babies.
Listen, the staff has had it up to here with her malarkey. As to quote Michelle, she has been talking about how it's hot, how it's cold, but you know what? They're gonna keep her in no matter what.
It sounds like a bunch of malarkey to me.
Yeah, I'm so glad you pulled that.
Oh, it's great. It was a good night for quotes.
Definitely.
All around the board. So I was going to play that clip when you said that this was a better season than Kagyan. I get very defensive about Kagyan.
Well, to be fair, though, in my defense, you using a clip from this season to justify why another season was better kind of invalidates your argument, right? Okay, there you go. It's all equalized now.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep going. We had a lot of questions with Mike here today, and here we go. This is about let's see just how good this cast is. Here is a question. This is from one of our listeners in New Zealand. This is Golden.
Hey, Rob and Mike, it's Golden from New Zealand here. So, Rob, you're doing a podcast with Marty Piombo, and suddenly Jimmy T walks in and he says, "Marty, I've been to the end of Survivor history, and there are 6 players from Koh Rong who get to play for a second time. I've got 2 questions. The first question is, which 6 players from Koh Rong are going to get a second chance in the future that Jimmy T visited? And the second question is, Doc said we made our own future. So do you guys think that actually this cast is so good that we'll be getting even more than 6 players return? Cheers, Rob. Love you, mate."
Okay, thank you, Golden. All right, Mike. So, Marty and Jimmy T have been to the future, and 6 people have come back, and there are 6 returnees from the season. First of all, are you buying or selling 6 returnees from the season?
I mean, that's a third of the cast. I mean, I feel like the last time we've seen that number is, what, Australia in All-Stars?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could see it, but I think it's more implausible than plausible
okay.
at this point.
Who's returning from this season?
Okay, so Ty is a lock.
Ty is a lock.
I feel like Aubrey...
Peekaboo.
There we go. He's ready to play some more peekaboo, ready to gather up any more fauna that might exist on wherever he's going to be playing in the future.
Okay.
I feel like no matter what the outcome is, I feel like Aubrey might be guaranteed as well.
Aubrey?
Yeah, I think she's definitely proved herself enough as like a personality and a strategy type that I think that's a good combination to let her go forth in another appearance of the game.
I probably wouldn't have her as the number 2 lock, but I think it'd be highly likely to see her again.
I'm assuming you'd put Debbie as the number 2?
Yeah, I think so. I believe that.
The bomb doors are open. Prepare to fire.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, second round of artillery.
I think Ty and Debbie are the lock.
I could definitely see that. I know Debbie told you, I think, in her interview that she didn't have another time in her, but give her a couple of years, wait until she's on the outside for longer than, you know, a year at this point, and see, she might come knocking at the door once again.
All right, so you think Aubrey, I mean, who else are the people that are really definitely going to be back?
I mean, I think you take one of Scott or Jason. I don't think they're going to take both, but I feel like the producers and productions liked editing them enough that they'd want to take one of them back at some point.
Who do you feel is the more likely person to play again?
I mean, Scott's a better player than Jason. But
I feel like that's a little bit of a hot take.
Jason did not do a good job this episode, Rob, in my opinion. I think he had a golden opportunity presented on
Golden
a plate.
Golden had the voicemail.
Oh, that's true. He had a nice kiwi presented on a plate in front of him. Jason promptly took that kiwi and hurled it right into the ocean, a la Marcus's idol.
See, I think if I had a gun to my head, who could win a season? I feel like if I had to pick Jason or Scott, I think I would definitely pick Jason.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said about Scott's merit in terms of really functioning as that linchpin between Jason and Ty. I think you could talk about his actions in the pre-merge and a couple of things he was doing in the post-merge as much as you want, including pouring the water over the fire, hiding the machete, obviously not looking good on him. But the fact is, he managed relationships pretty well, a lot better than Jason. And I would guarantee you, if Scott was in the position that Jason did, if Ty went up to him and said, "Vote Michelle," Scott's not saying, "Hell no, I'm going to vote for Joe." I feel like Scott is going to be the more, even though, again, he has this target of presumably being an athletic and physical threat, even though he did not win an immunity challenge, almost like James Clement when he was on this season, I feel like he has a better chance of making it farther into the game than someone like Jason, who, yes, he probably makes for better confessionals and he looks more like a villain and, you know, he's able to create probably better TV moments. But at the same time, I think this episode proved that when this guy is down, it's sort of like Joe said, once this guy is on the outs, he's really not going to make an effort to really help himself at all.
But what was it that he did in this episode that was so off-putting to you? The fact that he sort of tried to play dead?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Because I feel like that helped him. I feel like that what really screwed him was when he didn't play dead at the previous tribal council, when he was going on about how, like, making a real case about why they had to get Ty out of the game. This is Jason from the previous tribal council when he got all worked up.
Ty started flipping more than a flapjack. He's done it two times already.
Jason reminds me of like a Jack Black character from like a B movie that he played that he wants people to forget about, a role that he did in the 90s.
Was he in B movie? Was it the animated?
No. Yes, he played a grasshopper in B movie.
See, I don't misrepresent what I'm saying, that I'm not saying that I would pick Jason to win a returning season, but I do think that he would be better than Scott.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, just because, again, I feel like when your back's up against the wall, I'm picking Scott over Jason every time, considering how he reacted during this episode. Mm. Well, I mean, even though Scott didn't do it, I mean, when Scott's back was up against the wall after the Nick vote, he then proceeded to pour water all over the fire. So it's really picking the lesser of two evils here, quite literally, depending on where you might think about the two of them. But I would still go with Scott above Jason.
Like, I think that Jason made plenty of bad decisions, but I think that the idea to sort of play dead was not really a problem for him. I think that he sort of gave the impression that, like, they almost forgot about him. Like, they didn't quite, and you could see in some of the secret scenes, but they're talking about like, oh, that guy could really talk. Like, we should all just, you know, it's Sydney was not fooled by him, but I think that his instincts were right.
I mean, I think his instincts were right. And you could have all the instincts you want in the world. It's all about execution. And I feel like, yes, he wanted to have the strategy of like, look, I know I have a couple of votes locked up if I make it to the end, so I want to present myself as the biggest jury go possible. But, you know, you have to realize who you're playing with. I feel like Joe is a guy that once you piss him off, he's going to be pissed off at you for the rest of the game. And so, you know, when Ty comes to someone like Joe and says, okay, let's vote off Michelle instead of Jason, Joe's going to say no. He's going to say, no, Jason pisses me off. I'm going to vote off Jason. And I feel like Jason could have stood a chance of possibly getting Ty to sway people over had he maybe approach things a little more cautiously.
Yeah, but I feel like that stuff has already been done. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, Jason and Scott, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, they did not vote correctly one time after the merge. The person that they voted for did not go home one time after the merge. And I believe this was, what, five tribal councils that they went to at this merge. So that's not good. And in my exit interview, and I'm not sure if you listened to that.
I did, yeah.
I spoke with Jason about that. And he said, you know, I would do everything the same. I would do nothing different. The only thing I would do different is I wouldn't give the idol to Scott, which is fine. But I don't hear that sort of introspection that I would hear from, I feel like, somebody who's ready to sort of like take the next step as a Survivor player. And I feel like until you sort of go back to the drawing board, I feel like you're sort of doomed to repeat a lot of these mistakes.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think I was so torn during that exit interview because I was actually sort of happy that he did revel in his villain aspects. I mean, unlike, you know, certain male players from the past couple years that shall not be named, they decided to say the onus was on me. I was totally fine with the way the production decided to portray me. I was totally for it. So I was happy about that. But at the same time, yeah, that did sort of rub me the wrong way, that he's like, well, you know, I wouldn't really change anything, when you could probably go back to a lot of the decision notes that he made, specifically from the past 12 days. As you said, they were going into like Eddie Fox territory of like missing every single vote that they made. And they could have made so many decisions to help them along. And it's clear, I think that stems from the fact that I think Jason just might not have an awareness when it comes to probably handling certain people outside a certain personality bubble. Mm-hmm. I feel like the great thing about Survivor is that it really does bring together a whole lot of different personality types. And I actually did have a lot of fun with the Scott and Jason bromance, because you weren't expecting the best bounty hunter in Southeast Michigan to pair with this random basketball player, former Mormon. But the fact is, I think Jason could only deal with a specific amount of people, hence the whole bro alliance that formed after the merge. And then once everyone kind of saw that, oh, they're really just keeping these select people close, then people started to flock over to the other side. So I think that part of the reason why they may have lost is because Jason just can't really, and maybe Scott to a certain extent as well, and you could also maybe put Nick in this category too, is that they just couldn't handle certain types of personalities that were on the beach with them in order to bring them into a strategic perspective.
I'm saying that basically that these guys have some work to do if they come back, but I don't want to be hyperbolic and say that, oh, these are absolutely garbage players. They're terrible. And I'm certainly not saying that they're masterminds, but I think that they have some things that they do well and a lot of things that they need to work on.
Oh, that happens with new players all the time. And that's why I love the new player seasons. It's because the gameplay, for the most part, really isn't perfect, nor is it supposed to be. These are people that are supposed to be figuring things out as they go along. I always think that Survivor is a game where at any point in time, you can make a finite number of moves with an infinite number of personalities. That at any point in time, you know, you wrote about it or talked about it in the 49 Laws of Power. There are things you can do, but the fact is, if you're dealing with someone like Abby Maria, or you're dealing with someone like Kim Spradlin, there's different things you can do depending on the personality types you interact with. I think that Jason, being a fan of the show, was a great master of those finite number of moves you can make. He just didn't master the infinite number of personality types that you could handle.
You're right. And I think that it's not just that there are things that you can do. I think that Jeremy Collins last season, I think, is the ultimate example of, it's about the way that you make people feel in the game. And
exactly.
I think that when you are giving them those positive vibes that they feel great about working with, Kim Spradlin is another example that you see all these people that, you know, she's laughing all the time when she's talking to these people and, you know, lying about different things to people, that they are all feeling good. Oh, Kim is my friend. Jeremy is my friend. I don't know how many people outside of Scott were saying like, oh, you know, Jason is my great friend out here and Jason has my back no matter what. So I think that that's really very important. And I think that's very overlooked when we just talk about moves on the podcast.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think anyone outside of Scott would greet Jason at Ponderosa wearing a wrestling mask and a spandex, right?
You want to talk about that?
Let's get into it. Right. Right. I don't want to derail too much from Golden's question, but I feel like we have to broach the subject.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. Okay. We'll talk about that next. Table right. that for a second.
I'm putting it under the table. It's a very tall table. So
I mean,
in terms of
other returnees from this season, I mean, do you feel like Julia or Michelle? Is it an either or? Do you feel both, neither?
I mean, I feel like it depends on if Michelle wins, it might be a both. If she doesn't, I feel like it's an either or. Not to say that they're the exact same type, but I feel like you could probably, if neither one of them wins, you could probably get the same quote unquote casting story out of both of them, which is like, hey, I made a lot of moves. I was very, you know, underestimated at first as just this pretty young girl. But if Michelle wins and they do like a winner's thing, or, you know, on certain seasons where they might just bring back a slew of winners and a slew of two-timers and a slew of five-timers. I don't know why they would do that at all. That seems inane. But aside from that, I feel like otherwise they'd kind of be occupying the same slot.
Julia, to me, has a different sort of upside. I feel like Michelle needs to win to get one of these slots. I feel like that Julia could be in her whatever seventh place finish, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road. I think that she's still an intriguing person to bring back.
All right. So what about people like Sydney, who has definitely established herself as a personality and it definitely has been the impetus behind some votes, maybe not necessarily a strategic force. Do you think that she will and should have another shot at the show?
I would love to see her come back. I think that she's another person that's on the bubble.
Yeah.
So I don't know if we're getting to six. I think that, well, Abismo Cowboy, I forgot about him. So that's lock.
He's a lock. Yeah.
People are probably screaming at their phones like, you idiots.
Listen, if they needed to make a like Sarah McLachlan-esque like a text that came up on the screen after the episode saying like Caleb is fine and he hopes to play another day. I mean, I feel like Caleb could use that as leverage, bring a lawyer into CBS and say like, yeah, that's the verbal contract. that means I got to play again.
Yeah, it's a beast mode cowboy then. So that's four people that we say are pretty much at least three locks, one almost lock. Then I guess you have Neil. Neil wants to play again.
Yeah, but I mean, I could see it. I could definitely see if they were like, I wouldn't say scraping the bottom of the barrel, but if they're bringing in some, if they're, no, definitely not.
You're thinking of ice cream.
I was thinking of scraping things out of his back. No. But I think if it was just, you know, if they're bringing people in and I feel like if they've gone past those locks, like we said, I feel like Neil could be an interesting pick. I would even see maybe even someone like Peter. I mean, I don't know how he would do a second time in the game, considering how much he kind of flamed out the first time. But I feel like he would definitely be an interesting pick, considering he was a really big character for the first six episodes he was on.
I think we're really stretching at this point, Mike.
And I'm like, simmer down.
Peter.
Is that Sydney's cooking show while she's cooking the five pieces of coconut to put into the nice diet meal for the lean meals?
That comes on right after Jonas has a cooking show, is Sydney's cooking show.
And I'm like, simmer down.
Yes, we're waiting for the day when Food Network sells all its slots to former Survivor contestants with their myriad of cooking shows. Is Keith going to be up from Survivor Australia?
No, I'm the co-host with Sydney. So, Sydney, so how long do we need to cook this for?
We're in the middle of Koran. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, baby.
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
It's ready.
Well, that's not really a time frame, Sydney, but okay.
Do you need me to go check on that?
Don't check me, boo.
Okay, all right. Sorry.
We're not checking you. We're checking the oven, Sydney.
Sydney, what do you think? Is it good?
I was like, ooh.
Why'd you try that ice cream, Sydney? Watch out. It might be a little cold.
And I'm like, brr.
Oh, okay. Too cold.
Okay. All right. sorry. I want to just give Sydney her due.
Giving her due and then some. The library book of Sydney was very overdue, so we're checking her out.
Sorry. Yeah.
Don't check me, boo.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right. So that being said, yeah, I don't know if we're getting to six returnees. Okay, let's talk about the Ponderosa video from this week. And here is our good buddy, Shut Up Tim.
Hey, Rob and Bloomy. This is Shut Up Tim. And I was hoping you guys could comment on Ponderosa. I am just wondering who and what was Scott and what was he doing when he saw Jason at Ponderosa? I was hoping you guys could identify exactly who he's supposed to be and why he would do that. And also was wondering, Rob, when you got to Ponderosa, what masked figures met you there? Thanks. Love you, Baze.
Love you, Bay. Okay.
Love you, Bay.
Now, Mike, I assume you watched the Ponderosa video, right?
Oh, of course. Delightfully.
Yeah. So just to paint the picture for you guys who did not see the Ponderosa video. So Jason comes in, everybody's sort of like greeting him, but, you know, there's no Scott. He is absolutely absent and it's noticeable. And then the door kicks open and out comes all 6'11" of Scott Pollard in a Mexican wrestling mask and wrestling bikini trunks, which are significantly blurred.
Would you call them tight silveries?
I don't know what you would call them, but
I was like, ooh. Yeah.
That's major blurrage. Yeah. I was like,
and I'm like,
blur. I was like, blur?
Blurred lines. There were definitely some blurred lines and blurred packages going on. He gave Amanda Kimmel a run for her money, from my perspective.
He really did. So I don't know how sheer the wrestling trunks were.
Well, I mean, the sheer magnitude of it was sheer enough. It was, I mean, there's a lot, there, as Tim presents, there are a lot of questions that come with this. A, was this, you know, was this Scott's emotional item that they were being given in episode 3 or 4? Because I think, you know, they asked him afterwards, like, where did that come from? He's like, oh, no. I'm always bringing it just in case, in his, like, you know, Andre the Giant-esque form of inflection.
Yeah, Andre the Giant is a wrestler.
Yeah, that could be his homage. Or it could be, you know, I referenced Jason being a B-movie role from Jack Black. Maybe he was trying to reference Nacho Libre.
Maybe. But no, it is a bizarre scene there. And he has like some bottle of booze and he has like
Blue Label,
the immunity idol around it.
I want Scott to greet everyone at Ponderosa from every season from now on dressed like that.
He should bring the Mexican wrestling outfit to the final tribal council. He should stand there and ask his final tribal council question in the Mexican wrestling mask.
And I think he should stay on every season from now on. And instead of like the people walking over and bringing their torches to Jeff, like Scott should pick up the person and carry them over all the while going like, ooh, yeah, and then put the torch out. It's sort of like Scott will be with the Survivor what Napoleon Billy Part was to Reality Game Masters.
Yeah, that would be great. Overall, though, I feel like that Jason was either pretty unaffected by the whole thing. He just went back to, can I get breakfast? Can I get some breakfast around here?
Call it Brenner.
Call it Brenner. Really, they were like, we have a burger. Like, no, breakfast.
Yeah, that was pretty rude. Yeah. Maybe because I'm a burger person, but I would not turn down a breakfast for Brenner.
You do you, boo-boo.
Yeah.
Hey, he basically ate the worth of a picnic basket the next day.
Yeah, that was a very funny scene at the Ponderosa. I think Julia asks him, like, Scott, why do you have this stuff? Why do you have this Mexican wrestling outfit? He's like, why wouldn't I have it?
He's like, just in case.
Yeah. Just in case of what?
You know, so yeah, Scott was a Boy Scout. You know, you always got to be prepared for impromptu wrestling matches.
I do feel like the bromance of Scott and Jason is really outshining the bromance of Nick and Neil.
They're going to say Ty and Mark the Chicken.
Yeah. Well, Ponderosa bromance is as that goes.
Oh, I
wasn't minding. I like the Nick and Neil bromance, and I feel like that's sort of been pushed to the curb.
Yeah, I mean, we barely got any of that this week, mainly because it was really the Scott and Jason show, and really the next day it just cut to everyone else sort of utilizing SPV in terms of edgic terms. They were basically everyone else talking about how loud Scott and Jason were. So until the next person comes in, maybe that'll sort of become a little more subdated, but for now, it's the top story of Ponderosa.
So let's get into some more questions back to the show. Let's go into Regis from Buffalo, and he has a question about this final tribal council vote.
Hi, Rob. It's Regis from Buffalo, New York. I think that Survivor is in a pretty long drought in final tribal councils. They've been very lackluster in the sense that it's almost a guarantee as to who's going to win. Jeremy, Mike, to all the way back to, you have to go back to Fabio in Nicaragua to get a vote that wasn't almost a complete blowout. Are we setting ourselves up this season to have a really tight race? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Mike, this is a great question from Regis.
I'm so glad Regis came out of retirement to ask a question on a Survivor podcast.
Regis loves asking questions. That is, you know, if you're named Regis, you just love asking people questions. This was not a multiple choice question.
We have to lock in our final answer by the end of this segment.
But do you think that this could be the first final tribal council in a long time, really going back to Nicaragua, that we are going to have a close final vote?
I think we can say that now, but when we look ahead, it's really going to depend on who's there at the end. I would honestly say that I think the closest vote would be if Aubrey and Michelle are at the end. And again, I'm assuming final two. It might not be the case. We've had many finales before where there have been, you know, those random advantage challenges. And China was a big one where they only went from 4-3 that entire episode. But I feel like any outcome besides that, it's very heavily slided for one person to win.
Why do you think that is? Is that just the way that the jury system works, where it's just like there's one overwhelming consensus and then everybody else just falls in line?
Well, I mean, I think the thing with the final two and the big novelty of it back in the old school days of Survivor were that you could only pick one of these two people. And I don't know how much these people are really putting their heads together and saying like, okay, how are we all voting? You know, much like the Row 2-4 failed to do during Survivor Marquesas. I feel like people are very self-rationalized and do try to vote to the best of their ability. They can use their vote however they'd like. And this is an interesting group of people as well because, I mean, for example, you have someone like Neil, who was very close to Aubrey, but they're so separated from the game, and Neil has sat so much on the sidelines and seen other people come into Ponderosa that maybe if someone like, you know, if it's Aubrey and Michelle, maybe he chooses to vote for Michelle. You know, I feel like Neil might be a type of person who might not necessarily vote with his allegiances over someone that he thinks played the better game at the end of the day.
You think that Neil could vote for Michelle over Aubrey?
I mean, I don't think it's a huge possibility, but I feel
I'm like, bruh.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I that's probably a horrible example, but I feel like this group in particular, and I don't want to say they're necessarily the most game-minded, because in the room we just spent, what, like 10 minutes talking about how we don't think Jason or Scott are that great players, but I feel like they each have a certain head about themselves that they're saying, like, okay, this is my vote. This is how I'm going to use it.
Let's give you another question that is about the jury dynamics that I think is a factor here. Here's a question from Jason from New Jersey.
Hey, Rob. It's Jason from New Jersey. Both Scott and Jason have grudges against Sydney for betraying their original Braun alliance. My question is, could they potentially taint the jury against Sydney with their several days left at Ponderosa? And should players take this into account and keep enemies in the game until closer to the end? Thanks.
All right, so do you think that Jason and Scott, now on the jury, could be piling on Sydney?
Well, there's no doubt that they're going to be the loudest voices in the room, right? Mm-hmm. I think it depends on whether they're going to have an audience to play to. And again, if we're looking at this audience currently, which, you know, Julia was friends with them, Julia might be a little swayed, but I feel like people like Nick and Debbie and Neil are so independent that they might even be turned off by what, you know, Scott and Jason are saying. These are not people that would join up with the Shield in the Big Brother Canada one.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That could you see Jason and Scott as being the Survivor version, with all due respect to the great Alec Beal and Peter Brown?
Well, I get, oh boy, that's
really beating the drum against somebody who, and I don't think it would necessarily be Sydney. I think it could be Ty.
Yeah, I think it definitely is Ty, considering that, you know, Sydney did burn them, but she burned them a long time ago. Yeah. So much that they've run that burn under cold water.
And I'm like, burn.
No, burn, not burn.
Burn, Sydney.
We're in the middle of Koran. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, baby.
Yeah, well, stop burning people.
So they turned off the heat on that one. And Ty has burned them much sooner, and he's burned them twice. He keeps flipping back and forth. I would almost compare it to, like, if we go back to like Survivor Fiji, for example. The Four Horsemen think Stacy is with them, but Stacy flips to join that Syndicate alliance to vote them out. But the one that they're more pissed off at is Dreams, because Dreams just keeps flip-flopping back and forth. So since he's the more clear, I guess I'd say, obstacle to their game in a way, that's going to be the one that's sort of going to draw their ire. I still don't think they love Sydney, but it'll be interesting to see if it ends up being a Sydney tie final two, who they would choose between them.
Yeah, and I think that if we're going to make the Big Brother Canada one comparison, where you have those guys who wouldn't vote for Jillian under any circumstances, I think that applies more to Sydney than to Ty, because I don't know if we could argue and stand here and say that Ty potentially played the best game out there.
No, definitely not. I mean, we're talking about weird gameplay. He made a pretty big mistake with that extra vote this week, which was fantastic to watch, but at the same time speaks to, I honestly believe Ty Trang is a great character, but he is not a great player, personally speaking. That might be another hot take, but, and I'm totally fine with that as well. I think, you know, there's an intersectionality of lines almost running opposite to each other, of being a good strategist and being good TV. And Ty is definitely more so on the end of great TV, but not such a good player.
And that's fine. That's fine. I think that a lot of times the people that are the best TV are not necessarily the best strategists, and vice versa. Just because you're a good strategist doesn't mean you're good TV.
Definitely not. I mean, for example, and this might be another hot take, Jonathan Penner, love him as a character, not a great Survivor player.
How dare you?
I know. I apologize on behalf of his family, to all of his
Mike
fans.
Bloom, I wouldn't piss on you if you were on fire right now.
Well, good, because I'd like water. Scott, do you have any water? You're tall enough. You could just pour it directly onto me. I don't need Jonathan's piss right now. Thank you very much. I spurn your piss, Penner.
You're one of the bad guys.
All right, fine. You're the storyteller now. Yes, I understand. But one day the story will be mine, and then the story will be changed. Then the shoe will be on the other foot.
It'll be on the other foot.
Or the wound will be on the other knee, if you will.
All right, so don't pick a fight with Penner. Don't do it.
I'm gonna try not to pick a fight with your impersonation of Penner.
Yeah, don't do that. Okay. Speaking of Ty and moves he could have made, here is a question from Graham from the Bay. Love you, Bay.
Hey, Rob, it's Graham from the Bay Area, and I thought about a way for Ty to get Michelle out. We saw Ty coming around on Jason in this episode, and I feel like in previous episodes, and including this one, he seemed to recognize that Jason is a jury goat, a reason to keep him around. And also, to this point, no one has figured out a right way to play the advantage. How about this? Now, this may be a crazy idea, but what if Ty played his advantage and played his idol for Jason to get Michelle out? He gets, in my mind, the biggest threat out of the game, probably still has Joe and Aubrey on his side, has a goat to keep around, gets rid of Sydney at 5 and stays in the majority. Do you think this could work in this fan fiction? Let me get your thoughts. Thanks.
I'm like a storyteller. I hate Mike Bloom.
Hey, you're back again. Yeah. Get out of here. Yeah, scat. Go back to your horror film.
Yeah, the bye-bye man is going to get you.
Oh, boy.
All right. So what do you think of this idea of Ty? And Graham suggests that Ty use his two votes on Michelle. I mean, hypothetically, if he could have gotten Jason just to vote for Michelle, then that he wouldn't need to use the advantage and the hidden immunity idol. Should he have put the hidden immunity idol on Jason and then canceled out all the votes on Jason? But I think the problem with this, I don't think he knew there were votes going on Jason.
No, I think he thought that he had Aubrey with him so that he would at least have those four votes. I actually thought about this when I did rewatch the episode, that if he really was in tight with Jason, if, you know, petting the elephants really resonated with him that much that he was willing to change the game for him, that he would have given Jason the idol and would have negated those votes and ended up sending Michelle home. The problem is Ty walks into this tribal council here with two big pieces of armor with him, you know, the hidden immunity idol and the advantage. Almost like this Harry Potter reference will totally fly over your head, Rob, but he walked in basically with two Horcruxes, essentially.
Completely.
He put his soul into two different pieces of safety that promised him immortality, essentially. If he gets rid of both of those in one tribal council, even though he says up and down the street, I'm not going to go home with an idol in my pocket, I feel like he wants to hang on to at least one form of safety, considering that he basically is a lock until Final Four at this point. It's almost like if we're comparing it to like Mike and Shireen, that yes, Mike could have played the idol and gotten rid of somebody on the other side, but then his form of safety is going to be gone and he's going to become vulnerable next episode. And at the end of the day, to quote a lock first future Survivor season,
end of the day,
it has to come down to yourself. You know, you have to dot your I's and cross your T's in a way that makes sure that you get 3 days further. And Ty, by keeping an idol, was able to do that. If he plays the idol on Jason, absolutely no guarantee that he's going to be safe next round.
At the end of the dais are all the people that are our least favorite people in the wedding party.
I don't know if Ty and Anna crashed the wedding, but they made it there, which is very nice.
Do you think Ty Trang was at the end of the dais, or do you think he was more in the middle of the dais?
I think, you know, he didn't burn Caleb, so he was probably in the middle of the dais. If it was Scott Pollard's, I don't know, renewing his vows, I feel like he'd definitely be at the end of the dais.
Yeah, probably be way down at the end of the dais.
Or Scott would turn to him and say, okay, Ty, give me the rings. And Ty would be like, no. I'll give you one ring.
Oh my God!
Okay, let's take a question that has to deal with everybody's favorite subject, Mark the Chicken questions. Here's a question from Steph.
Hey Rob, this is Steph Ferrellera. So now that we know that the Mark the Clucks lives to see another week, I have a hypothetical situation for you. Let's say that CBS says that you can come to the finale and they'll put you on the finale. They'll let you talk strategy, maybe can even plug the podcast, but you have to be Mark the Chicken's handler for the night. You have to hold him during the show, bring him up on stage. Would it be worth it? Love to hear your thoughts.
First off, Steph, thank you for the question. Mike, if I had to be Mark the Chicken's handler for the night, would it be worth it to have what it sounds like multiple segments at the reunion show?
I mean, first of all, you're going to piss off a lot of pre-jury people, I'm assuming. They're going to sit in the audience in lieu of them building a chicken coop for that back row to put Mark the Chicken
well,
in.
It sounds like I would be holding the chicken for the night.
Oh my God, look at a chicken.
Yeah.
Do you think you would be mentioned, though, or do you think it would just be a close-up on your hands for the entire three
she
hours?
She said I would get to talk strategy, I could plug the podcast, so it does sound as though this is a no-brainer, Steph. Yeah. Absolutely. The question should be, Rob, if for the ability to have multiple segments at the Survivor Korong reunion show, would you be willing to let Mark the Chicken live in your podcast studio for a month? So just like I'm doing podcasts, Mark the Chicken is just in here pooping everywhere, flying around, making noise, clucking while I'm trying to do podcasts. Would I be willing to put up with that for a month?
You're going to have to buy a lot of grubs to help satiate him.
I don't know. That I wouldn't know. And again, no cage. He's just loose, flying his feathers everywhere. I would have to really consider that one. But just to sit there and hold him all night. I mean, how funny would that be if I was just holding Mark the chicken for 3 hours at the live finale?
You probably get the benefit of free eggs as a result.
I mean, it would be a very funny visual of me holding the chicken for the entire show.
I mean, you could also, you know, take a picture of it and say, like, all right, this is what my life has come to. In order to get back on this show, I have to be holding someone else's chicken for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I'd just be standing there carrying a chicken.
I don't need to be carried, bro.
I mean, holding the chicken.
Yes, don't use the word carried around Michelle. She might take it out on the chicken.
Yeah, so I think that would be very funny to just have me standing there. But in all seriousness, will they have a chicken? Will they have Mark the chicken at the finale?
The big question mark is if he makes it through to the end of the season, then I feel like they have to. But the problem is this season filmed a full year beforehand. Now, I don't know about the life expectancy of chickens. I don't even know. Maybe they let Mark the Chicken go run off into the jungle a la Harry and the Hendersons at the end of this season. So who knows if they could even get Mark. They might have to bring in like a Mark lookalike. If they're able to get a hold on him, maybe they'll bring him in. They've done weirder things on these reunion specials. Mm-hmm. This might be up there with, you know, Coach's lie detector test, Stephanie LaGrosse's filet mignon pizza.
Well, that was not something that they did. That was just something that she blurted out.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like these survivors also bring their old sort of spontaneity onto these reunion shows as well. I mean, I don't think, did they know that Russell was, you know, bringing Jason the socks and the letter getting thrown into the fire as well? Like, I feel like these survivor contestants are like, great, it's a reunion. They might turn off my mic at some point, but I'm just going to go wild here. So I feel like they would not hit the limit if they brought out Mark the Chicken for maybe right before a commercial break.
I think Mark the Chicken package, no Mark the Chicken. I'm calling my shot on that.
Do you feel like I know you asked this on the David Bloomberg podcast. Is there starting to be an oversaturation on Mark the Chicken here? He got his hashtag. Jeff Probst talked about it with Dalton Ross actually saying, I wish we had focused on Mark sooner. Is this sort of the case of like when your dad starts listening to the music that you like, when you realize like, okay, now that my parents are onto it, it really isn't cool anymore.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there isn't more backlash from different corners of the Survivor internet community. Like, it's no surprise to me that, you know, the TV viewing audience is eating this up with a spoon. And for me, if I didn't have a 2-year-old who really enjoyed the Mark the Chicken stuff, I probably have some Mark the Chicken fatigue as well. So I am a little surprised that it hasn't worn thin with people all over Twitter and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it really adds to the family appeal, right? Now you could say, hey, kids, come for the wild animals. Adults, stay for the strategy.
Yeah, hey, kids.
Oh, my God, look at a chicken.
Yeah, exactly. Do you think maybe afterwards Ty is going to fly to Cambodia and just work at that wildlife reserve? I feel like that was like the perfect place for him.
I think it was a good place for him. That would be a good landing spot for him.
There was a really like subtle, funny moment in that wildlife scene where they first see the elephant and Michelle walks out and he just says like, oh my God, who is this? But clearly the director of the wildlife reserve thought she was asking him. So he says like, oh yeah, well, I'm Nick. It was just such a like really awkward exchange in that she was clearly meeting the elephant, but this man decided to introduce himself instead.
I did not catch that.
It was a very subtle, but I thought it was really funny. It was comparable to in Survivor Philippines when apparently my new sworn enemy, Jonathan Penner, talks about how his name is Normal.
Yeah, my name's Normal. Let's take another question. This is from our good buddy, Matt Cerrone. Mets are playing at night on the West Coast, so he has some time to leave us a voicemail.
Hey, Rob. Hey, Mike. It's Matt Cerrone. Is Aubrey working to bring Ty to the finals because she knows nobody's going to vote for this guy? If you look at the jury, I can't see anyone voting for him to win. Plus, he's going to be a disaster in tribal council with his speeches, like you guys talked about on Know It Alls. Not to mention, 2 episodes ago, Aubrey told this guy or advised him not to play his idol, which he's going to use now to get to Final Four, and she knew that. And then she had a chance to vote him out last night with Michelle, and yet she didn't. So, you know, is this her goal? Is she trying to get him and Joe and herself to the finals? Because in that scenario, because of respect for her game, even with Michelle and Sydney on the jury, it seems to me like she wins in a landslide. Do you guys agree?
All right, Mike, here's what I want to know from you. We at home have decided, and Steven did a great job of talking this through last night, Ty is a goat on the jury. Ty does not have the votes to win in the jury. But do the players in the game, do you feel like they think Ty is a goat on the jury?
I would think so. I think actually, I mean, you picked up on a notion that I don't think the general audience might be thinking. They might think, oh yeah, Ty's a fan favorite. He has the story of being a refugee. He has an advantage. He has an idol. From that perspective of the game, he's been delivering. If he makes it to the end, he's going to win. But, you know, the edit that we might be perceiving from a fan favorite might be very different from what the players are perceiving. Going back to your first season, Christy Smith, love her to death, but you have to assume that she wasn't as rainbows and sunshine as her edit led us to believe. And I feel like what Matt pointed out, you and Steven have really keyed into this fact that the players in the game themselves don't necessarily, I wouldn't say appreciate, but they don't really approve of what Ty has been doing. And it's not even, you know, the idols or the advantages or even his stumbling at tribal council. It's just this incessant flipping back and forth and really showing no allegiances to anyone but himself. The question is whether Aubrey is seeing towards that. I'm not entirely sure, because yes, she did just make, what, a final three deal with Ty and Joe at the very beginning. But that being said, I mean, she just pissed Ty off here. Mm-hmm. She just burned him. And the problem with burning him is that instead of, you know, blindsiding him, he's still in the game. And I don't know if we're to believe the next time on, but that's pretty dangerous considering that because Ty has an idol, Ty is basically the majority next episode. You know, they could try to do a, I don't know, a 2-2-1 split, but essentially Ty's going to play the idol on somebody.
Ty can do whatever he wants next week.
Yeah, he can play. If he plays the idol on himself, he's the deciding vote. If he ends up being with Michelle and they play the idol correctly, they're the deciding votes. So
it was a bad week to piss off Ty.
Yeah, exactly. I think Aubrey was a little short-sighted here in making that move because, yes, while Jason, despite what he may be displaying, would have a bunch of votes should he make it to the end, you just decided to double-cross someone that not only is very powerful still in the game, but that you just became really close to. You kind of gave Ty a taste of his own medicine.
Yeah.
And now we'll see whether Ty swallows that medicine or whether he spits it out.
It's going to be really fascinating to see in this next episode because while you have Sydney and Michelle, who kind of told off Ty at Tribal Council, and so you would think, okay, he's going to be annoyed with them because they were the ones that really told him off, where Aubrey was definitely less hostile to him. She was a little bit more like, oh, I thought we did talk about that. Like, what's going on? I don't really know. Where then he feels closer with Aubrey, though. So who does he walk away from that tribal council more mad at? Aubrey or the tag team of Michelle and Sydney? And the promo would have us believe that it is Aubrey that he is the most mad at, and he wants to partner up with Michelle. But if we've seen anything from Ty, he is easily swayed one way to the other.
Yeah, and I mean, we also, he can't really fault Michelle at all because he was targeting her. She was doing the best she could out of self-preservation. I was also really interested in that tribal council in that Michelle knew she was on the rope, so she was very quickly, succinctly making her points as to why they should keep her. But Ty never seemed to really fess up as to, you know, if this was his big plan to get rid of Michelle, I would almost throw my cards down on the table to go back to that poker analogy and say, okay, look, these are the reasons why you should get rid of Michelle. I don't know if he was still trying to like organize a blindside and he thought he had the votes, but he was being surprisingly mum and extremely obviously shifty when it came to targeting Michelle at that tribal council.
Yeah, you're right. He was sort of doing like a half measure of, he wasn't just coming out and saying it. He was sort of like still trying to make people feel like that he was still voting for Jason. But then he started getting into, you know, and I was like, why do we have an extra person in this alliance? I thought that the alliance was four. Why do we have this extra person?
Yeah, is that worse to you than counting off 1, 2, 3, 4 in Blood versus Water?
No, because that was headed into a tie vote. That was the final six heading into some sort of a tie, but and not that tie. not that kind of tie.
Yeah, Ty already returned, I guess, because he was already in Blood versus Water at the final six.
So I think that was not great. I think that which prompted Michelle to call him out.
It sounds like a bunch of malarkey to me.
I didn't realize Michelle was a fan of Top Chef season 3 contestant Brian Mularkey.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's what she's going for.
Very deep-seated reference, I know.
Yeah, deep cut. But I don't know if Aubrey thinks Ty is a goat. To me, I still go back to that conversation from, I believe it was last week's episode, where Aubrey and Sydney talked, and they said, we can't bring no damn Ty to the final three. And
That sounds like one person in particular said it, depending on how you were speaking.
Yeah. And I think Sydney is very much against Ty getting to the final three. I think they feel like, oh, he had an idol, he had an advantage. I think that they look at that as points in his favor. And I think they're scared of him in the final three or two.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think, you know, who knows, maybe Ty is going to start trying to go the route that Jason tried to and saying that, like, oh, yeah, everybody hates me, nobody's going to vote for me on the jury. But even though he has that sort of vitriol building, you can't necessarily count on that. You know, it's tough to really make those decisions. And again, you know better than I do, but in terms of picking people for your end game that you are depending on people to vote against them and vote for you in a way, hopefully at the final tribal council, because you are definitely spinning the roulette wheel then. And you might put it all, you know, you might hedge your bets and put it all on one color. But at the end of the day, the jury might be thinking a different way and the ball might land on a different color. And then you just lost your vote and you could have won, but you decided to take somebody to the end. So Ty is definitely
dumb ball.
Yeah. Dumb ball.
The dumb ball lands in the black and you lose all your money. But I think that, yes, Ty is not necessarily putting friends on the jury. But at the same time, if Ty gets to the end, as much as Steven does talk about him being a goat, and I could see that, he could also have a case to win as well. I mean, this is a guy that was fighting. Granted, he created adversity for himself in the very beginning by saying, hey, let me go look for an idol and then tell everyone that I'm looking for an idol. But he sort of had this whole uphill battle he was facing. And if we're talking about going back to my nemesis, Jonathan Penner, telling a story, building a resume, if you will, Ty might have one of the best ones going into the finals.
I think he's going to have a hard time making his argument. I really do. And I think that the language barrier is an issue for him. I don't think that he could really make that. He seems like he starts to get a little choked up under pressure. And I feel like that where if somebody comes at him aggressively in that tribal council, I think he's going to freeze up. And I think it's going to be a bad look for Ty in terms of winning the game.
Absolutely. And again, because, you know, a few people on that jury, it's particularly the two loudest ones at this point, Ty is directly responsible, and with Jason sort of indirectly, but still he made the first flip, directly responsible for their demise. They're going to have a lot of words to say specifically directed towards him, and he is going to fluster, and that might affect his performance depending on when they go in the order for the rest of that final tribal council, should he make it.
And let me also call my shot on this, that if that
Don't throw away your shot there.
Yeah. If this was to happen and somebody eviscerates Ty in the final tribal council, I think that the viewing audience would be very unforgiving about that. I think that if somebody really hammers Ty and gives him almost a, you know, snakes and rats type speech, I think that
chickens and grubs.
Yeah, I think that the audience will respond quite negatively to that.
I completely agree. I mean, I don't want to make the Yao Man comparison because obviously I think that's probably only skin deep, but I feel like he's kind of in that spot of he is sort of the fan favorite, where back in those old school Survivor days, the fan favorite, including the one that I'm talking to, would go home right before the finals, where they get this really interesting, arguably the best, most complex edit of the entire season, but they went home. And you know, if they had gone to the final tribal council and lost, they would have had a completely different edit. And I feel like the thing that we're getting from Ty, yes, he's been making a lot of mistakes and doing a lot of different things than we usually see as of late. But the fact is, I completely agree. If he does make it to the end and loses, that is not a losing finalist edit, in my opinion.
So what do you think it is?
I think he's going to go out at 4-3.
It's going to be interesting to see. I really think that Jason going out of the game really did shake up this whole edit conversation in a very fun way. And I'm very curious to see how it's going to play out these next couple of weeks.
Well, even if you look at it from just an outside the edit, from like a logical perspective. So if Ty plays his idol successfully and gets to the final four, I feel like, again, going back to Yao Man, Ty is in this must win situation where I feel like he's just become too dangerous at that point of the game. He's become too much of the main character in this story that he needs to be eliminated.
I think it's going to be really fun to see what happens in this next episode. Let's continue on with the Aubrey side of things. This is Ryan from Queens.
Hi, Rob. This is Ryan from Queens, New York. My question is about Aubrey. What's interesting to me about next week is that Aubrey is clearly the biggest threat, but has strong relationships with everyone left in the game. So I have to know, what are the power rankings of the remaining players from most likely to vote Aubrey out next week to least likely? Thanks.
Okay, this is an interesting game. I don't know if we've done this before. Power rankings of most likely to least likely to vote out Aubrey in this next episode. So the bottom has to be Joe.
Definitely Joe. Unless, you know, Aubrey decides to stop gathering wood. I feel like she's on Joe's good list forever.
All right, so now 1, 2, 3. How do you rank Ty, Sydney, and Michelle in the order that they want to vote out Aubrey?
Well, I feel like Ty's got to be number one with a bullet, but from a gun that he's firing away from any sort of animals. Because again, we just talked about it. She kind of burned him in a way in that he said, let's do this. She basically said no and had him waste his advantage as well. And even though he still has an idol, he removed one form of that armor. And so I feel like he's going to be most likely to go for her head.
But let's put this from Ty's perspective. Let's take the emotions out of it. If you're Ty at the final five, and he's really in the true Kathy Vavrick O'Brien spot, right? Where he is the one person at five with there being two pairs, with all due respect to Sean and V, who are not in an alliance. You have Pascal and Nalia on one side and Sean and V on the other. And there's Kathy in the middle having to decide. I mean, is the move to go with whoever is the less tight two? And if that's the case, would that be Sydney and Michelle?
Well, and the question is, how much of a pair are Sydney and Michelle? We've seen them a couple times. They were obviously the swing votes last week. Here they were having a couple of conversations, but I feel like Aubrey and Sydney are a much tighter pair than Sydney and Michelle.
You think that that's the pair? Because I feel Joe is in the mix, and I feel like that they're sort of being painted as the modern day Pappy and Nalia.
Do you think Aubrey would bring back any mints from any rewards that she happens to go on?
Bring back John and Aubrey? Is that what you're saying?
No, but oh boy. Don't want to get the goats on this one. I think that, I mean, Aubrey has said in other secret scenes elsewhere that Sydney is really her number one. I mean, even this week she talked about how the best work is done with these one-on-one conversations. And I feel like as much talk as we see between Sydney and Michelle, I feel like Sydney and Aubrey have really paved a solid ground for themselves ever since Sydney flipped at the final 10. And so I feel like Aubrey sort of has a lot of different one-on-one relationships going on, but I feel like her strongest one outside of Joe might be with Sydney. So for, again, going back to these power rankings, I would put Sydney at number 3, right above Joe at the bottom.
Wow, you feel like Sydney is that tight with Aubrey? You feel like Sydney won't throw Aubrey under the bus?
Aubrey just sided with Sydney here. I mean, Sydney kind of owes her at this point.
I guess so. But does Sydney say that she has a better chance to win if she gets rid of Aubrey?
I guess so. But at the same time, again, we're looking at this from a subjective point of view. If we're going towards Aubrey's edit, I'm trying to think of how many times in the past few weeks that people have said, oh, Aubrey's going to win if she gets to the end of this game. I think Jason brought it up briefly during this episode, but there wasn't nearly as much talk about Aubrey getting to the end as much as there was Michelle getting to the end this episode. And it might have been because Ty had been targeting her, but there hasn't been too much talk all around about, like, if Aubrey gets to the end, she's going to crush it. And that makes me believe that they might not be thinking that.
So do you feel like that even if Ty and Michelle get together, that Sydney will stick with Aubrey? And then what is the vote there? That Sydney, Aubrey, and Joe vote against Michelle? I mean, that feels like a terrible move strategically for Sydney, because she has whatever power she gained this week after Michelle didn't get voted out. She's basically throwing that away and putting it in the hands of Aubrey and Joe. Pick whoever you want to go to the final three with, Sydney or Ty.
Yeah, I guess so. And I mean, it might not be a great decision on her part, but at the same time, again, I feel like the seeds of this relationship has been so sown that it's really rooted deep inside of her. I don't know what's going to make her want to flip on Aubrey anytime soon. I mean, outside, you know, ever since that Nick vote, the two of them really have not, you know, the two of them have not deviated from voting together. And yeah, you could probably include Michelle a little bit in that as well, though, you know, Michelle was more so with Julia for the first little portion of the game in that post-merge section. Mm-hmm. But the two of them have really been thick as thieves that I, for some reason, in my opinion, it's going to take a lot to to separate them. Though Sydney, who knows? Maybe next episode she says, well, if I get rid of Joe, then Aubrey will have no choice but to go with me.
Possible. Certainly possible.
But that's being very, very tricky with the gameplay. Or maybe Sydney will say, let me vote with Joe and Aubrey, but let me assume that, you know, Ty and Michelle play the idol and they do the dirty work. They get rid of Joe for me. That way I still have my hands clean, but now I'm Aubrey's only option.
If I'm Ty, I think that the move is vote with Joe and Aubrey against Michelle or Sydney, whatever Aubrey is willing to do. Pick one of those two and then go with them, because for a number of reasons. One, it seems to me like that is the clearest path to the final three. Also, that I would rather be in the final three playing for immunity with the combination of Aubrey and Joe. And Joe, who's been a complete non-factor in these individual immunities. It's basically, if you're Ty, would you rather go basically one-on-one against Aubrey, or would you rather square off against Sydney potentially for that final immunity at either four or three? I would rather take Sydney out, take Michelle out, take my chances, even if it's a final two and Aubrey swears up and down to Joe she wants to go to the end with him. I think that that is the best move for Ty.
Definitely. The final immunity challenge always is a big question, because it's definitely deviated from, again, those old school days when it was simply hold on to something for as long as possible. Now it seems like a lot of the modern immunity challenges, they're very focused on hand-eye coordination. And it seemed like Ty was actually able to beat Sydney at the willpower type of challenge, but I doubt that's going to happen at the final three or final four, if you will. So the question of, you know, being an immunity threat is always interesting as well. I mean, when Sydney first betrayed the guys to come over to this female-led alliance, you guys had talked about, did Sydney do this because she felt like she had a better chance of beating these people in challenges? I mean, Sydney just won her first immunity challenge. So,
well, she went right there against Ty. So she took Ty to the brink that other time. You know, she was right there.
But I feel like that theory might be a little invalidated, just because the challenges, you know, they're not terribly conducive to these big, bulky men anymore. They're stand in a spot or balance something on a plate. Or,
well,
you know,
let me just say that in many seasons that we've seen in the last 10 or so seasons, that the final immunity tends to be some sort of, like, you know, gigantic staircase set piece, which is, you know, running up flights of stairs. Now, maybe they're saying with Korong, they're not going to do that. We didn't see that sort of a structure built in Cambodia. So maybe it's not going to be that case, but we have seen that a lot. And these players are going off of what they've seen over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, that's very true. Because I think the only reason that we didn't see that in Cambodia is because they were really going with the theme of let's bring back special challenges. And so they said we need to torture Stephen Fishback a little more and put some motion in
right.
for the final immunity
but
challenge.
Just let's go. I mean, go through final immunity challenge in Worlds Apart is this whole big thing that Mike is going to go and beast through. And the same thing with Survivor San Juan del Sur, that somehow Jacqueline ends up winning that challenge.
And Kagayan, it was the maze.
And in Blood versus Water, it was another one of these things where Monica checked Jervis going up the steps. Even in Karamoan, it was like this thing where he had to, like, Cochran had this big advantage where he didn't have to go up one of the flights of stairs. So we have seen that last challenge. Really, last season was the first time in a long time that it wasn't something that was very physical.
Yeah, not since Philippines, which was the redux of the fateful Suri challenge, hold on to that ball while balancing it between cylinders.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're right. If they're going with this trend, then we might see this big, grandiose final challenge, in which case, I mean, Sydney is probably the most athletic out of all of them, but you also have to incorporate if there's a mental element as well, in which case, I mean, Michelle crushed that memory challenge.
Yes.
But Aubrey, being a brain, has definitely some mental aptitude as well and could do well on the puzzle,
too. But forget Aubrey. Just go with the side that has Joe on it. Have Joe be one. Just like, so you only have to worry, like, the worst case, you only have to worry about one person.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the reason why Joe did so well in this immunity challenge this past episode was because it involved walking slowly. Anything that involves speed, he is no good.
Yeah, so that's all I'm saying. I think it's an easy decision for Ty. Take the road that has a potential matchup with Joe in the final three.
So you're saying, like, he almost has to pull his own, what you were assuming Sydney did, and saying like, okay, let me now go with people that I can beat the final challenge.
Right. And Aubrey and Joe, that was the pair that he told them, as long as he's not going to make the emotional decision of like, hey, I told you guys about my advantage and you didn't do what I wanted. So now he needs to just suck it up, double back with them and say, hey, we're still good at this final five, right? I have an immunity idol, so don't piss me off.
Well, what we say he should do and what he might do are two different things, considering that, again, basically every vote this post-merge, he has flipped back and forth between different sides.
Right. We don't know what Ty will do. We can only say what he should do.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's keep going. And speaking of choices, here is a question about Aubrey's big decision from last night.
And Mike, if Fingbot speaks so wrong, I just want to know that. What would Sophie do? Hashtag WWSD, hashtag 604, hashtag Peppa.
Is that the lost chipmunk?
It was allegedly the Zingbot. Mike, Aubrey had a choice last night, and she compared it to, she said it was Sophie's choice.
It's like Sophie's choice.
Now, was it Sophie's choice or Rafe's choice?
Yeah, see, if she was a true RHAP fan, she would pull out the Rafe's choice reference. So I don't know, production would have stopped them, said, brr, wait a minute. You can't reference a guy from a season that nobody remembers.
And I'm like, brr.
Yeah.
That was the voice of the production team.
Okay, so should we look at this in the prism of Sophie Clark? What would Sophie Clark do if, since it is Sophie's choice?
Yeah, so if it was Sophie Clark, I mean, I feel like she made a Sophie decision. And, you know, Sophie faced this decision a couple times during South Pacific, right? Not necessarily this, but this idea of, do Albert and I go to Savaii and take out someone from our alliance? And she decided to quote James Clement to not bite the apple. And Aubrey didn't hear. So I think she stayed true to her test tube mother.
So if that was the case, do you feel like she did stay true to her core alliance, which was Sydney and Michelle?
Yeah, I would say so. Again, you know, I think Aubrey is definitely the center of this web at this point, where I feel like she's made a lot of, I wouldn't say final two deals, but a lot of one-on-one relationships with people. And even though she ended up kind of snapping one strand of that web, she fortified four other strands of that web. So I think that overall it was, I guess we'll have to see what Ty does, but overall, I guess we would call it a good decision on Aubrey's part.
Yeah, I do think that it probably is the Sophie call. I think that if anything, Ty is the Cochrane in this scenario, the South Pacific Cochrane, and not the one that she is the love child of, which I'm assuming is the Karamoan Cochrane.
The one that was eating Balut like Mark the Chicken eats grubs.
Right, that she is the one who is saying to the Thai / South Pacific Cochrane, where she's coached, she's like, we're drawing a line in the sand against these guys. You come with us. You know, you're one of the good guys. You're Hercules, Thai. You can stand up to the bullies. Like, yeah, I can do it. And I think then screwing that Cochrane over at Final Seven is the right move.
Yeah. And
that's what Sophie would do.
And it's interesting, like, comparing this to, I feel like, I wouldn't necessarily say Sydney and Albert are like a one-on-one comparison, but I feel like both are sort of liable to say like, all right, I'm going to flip whenever is easiest for me. And it's really interesting. There was a moment in the pre-tribal councils plotting where Sydney was venting to Aubrey about how miffed she was about the way Ty apparently approached her about voting for Michelle. And Aubrey said like, okay, just so you know, and I hope this is okay, I'm thinking things from a different perspective and I'm thinking things a different way. And I feel like Aubrey did a really great job of just, again, a finite number of moves with an infinite number of personality types. You know that approaching Sydney and basically saying, this is what I believe, is not a good way to handle that conversation and have her on your side, no matter how strong your relationship may be. And so I feel like she, sort of like Sophie, he was probably the more level-headed and more logical of the pair in South Pacific. She was able to kind of soothe Sydney a little bit and say, okay, let's get you a little less trigger happy. Let's just stick with the plan and vote off Jason.
Interesting, though. I feel like that Sophie is maybe a little bit more like Sydney than Aubrey, where I feel like that Aubrey is willing to explore ideas. And I think that Sydney is much more likely to shut it down.
And I'm like, brr.
Like Albert's like, okay, here's what we're like, no, we're not doing that.
Well, I mean, Sydney was, again, portrayed to be one of the swing votes last episode. And I guess if and when you get an exit interview with her, you can really ask her, do you think you were really contemplating that? But at least the way Sydney has been shown, I feel like she's been shown more in that Albert light than that Sophie light.
Okay, well, let's not get too caught in the weeds on
the comparisons
one.
Between Survivor South Pacific and Survivor Co. Wrong.
Yeah. All right, let's get a quick word in from Mikey the Chimp.
Are we getting a family visit?
Okay. Very efficient voicemail there from Mikey the Chimp.
Was Mikey the Chimp the one that was hopping all over Jason at the wildlife sanctuary, or was that a different monkey?
I think that was a different one. Okay. But yeah, I feel like that it's great that be so efficient, but I feel like that Mikey the Chimp doesn't have that much time for me.
I guess it's short, sweet, and to the point, right? You said like 30 seconds and under. He got it maybe in 3 seconds and under.
Yeah. All right. Will we get a family visit this season? Now, traditionally, the family visit has been always around Final Six, Final Seven. That's even where we saw it last season. I think we actually saw, Final Eight last season when Joe got voted off.
But everything was a little weird in Cambodia. Let's remember that the number of people that were left in the game at the beginning of this episode was the number of people left at the beginning of the finale during Survivor Cambodia. So things were a little off during that season.
Things were a little wonky. However, going back to Survivor Cagayan, we saw the family visit in the finale at the Final Four in Survivor. Take those two Blood versus Water seasons out of the mix where we
didn't
have family
visits. Yeah, there's one long family visit.
Right, one long family visit. In Survivor Worlds Apart, we also had the family visit in the finale. Do you feel like we are headed towards a finale family visit again, or does Survivor scrap the family visit in this season altogether?
No, I feel like, especially if by happenstance we're going down from 4 to 3, they need to pad out that finale. And I can imagine a family visit is the sublime way to do so. I could not imagine it happening next episode. It might, and I might not even know it, but considering that they only got letters from home, a couple of episodes ago, I feel like you want to space out that time with people outside of the game. I feel like it's a perfect way to bring people in, especially, depending on who you have at the end there. It might be a really powerful story if you have someone related to Ty there, or someone related to Joe, so that he could have that Dan Lembo-esque moment. Yeah, exactly. Gets to squeeze his butt a little bit. So I think that it would be a perfect place to put it into the finale.
I think that we will get it. I don't think it's this week. I think it's probably at the Final Four, and I think that's when we're going to do it. I don't like it in the finale, though. I have to be honest.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the finale is cluttered as it is. I mean, I know we didn't get to talk about the finale since I was on before that in Cambodia, but that was, as much as that Final Six Tribal Council was amazing, that felt so just cramped. And it's either the finale is too cramped or it's so spread out where you have, again, in 29 and 30, they've had these advantage challenges where you just feel like things have been going on forever and
ever. Oh, we're getting that. That'll be there.
Yeah, so that'll definitely pad things out a little bit. Now, the question is, if they do bring in the family, which variant do you think we'll see? Do you think we'll get the Cagayan where they're just sort of there? Or do you think we'll get the Worlds Apart where one of them will try to help out or maybe even actively participate in the challenge in some capacity?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how that went down. So Mike won an advantage, and the advantage was that then he got to spend 30 minutes with his mom practicing the blindfold maze. That was how it worked.
And his mom biffed it for him, but he still won.
He still won. He didn't need the help.
No.
So I feel like that's probably more like what you're going to see. The thing that I don't like about it, the family visit in the finale, is that I almost feel like, to me, the viewer, I'm going to see them with their family in about 40 minutes. I don't need to see them with their family on day 38.
Now, that's true. It's like having your parents visit you at camp 3 days before the session breaks.
Yeah. So to me, it just has the view where I sort of like it in the traditional spot. But call me a purist, Mike.
Hey, listen, you are among friends here, so I can agree with you. But we're sort of past the point where it usually happens. So again, unless it happens, I mean, I know it's happened in the Final Five before. I think Exile Island, it happened at the Final Five. But they haven't done it at the Final Five in a really good amount of time. So I feel like we're sort of past the normal median point where it occurs.
Yeah, so we'll see. I do think we're going to get it, but I think it's going to be in the finale. All right, let's take a question from one of our longtime listeners in Olney, Illinois.
Rob, this is Butch. I just want to let you know, your position as Junior Jeopardy Firewood bitch is safe for another season. What's with these people? Why don't they want to get firewood? I don't get it. Anyway, keep believing in yourself. Butch, out.
Oh, good. I'm glad. I was waiting for him to tack it.
Thank
on
you,
end
Butch.
There.
Yeah. What is with these people? Why don't they want to get any firewood, Mike?
Well, I guess, and I hadn't realized before that I guess Joe is a fireman, which again I'd say compares more to Tom Westman than Butch in this aspect. But
is he a fireman?
The back of his shirt says like Hollywood Fire Rescue. And I think in a secret scene, somebody brings up that he used to be a fireman, which
okay.
I guess he was covering all aspects of the 911 spectrum. Maybe he was a paramedic at some point as well.
Yeah, it was FBI.
Well, I mean, maybe he had to go undercover as a fireman for a while. Build
undercover
it up from
fireman
the inside.
Or undercover Butch?
Undercover fireman Butch.
Okay. In terms of the fire.
We're in the middle of Coron. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, babies.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Definitely. Though, again, let's compare Joe's reaction to Jason as opposed to, yes, Sydney was getting very ruffled or rustled by Joe, but she still stuck with him at the end, which, again, I think speaks towards the disparity in those two people's playing styles.
Yeah, she got over it. She got over it. So that was a good thing for Sydney. All right. Let's take another voicemail from one of our listeners who has a question about the behavior of survivors.
Yeah, I have a quick question. I'm superstitious. Why do people that have been on Survivor go to the homes of other people that have been on Survivor and watch people who are currently on Survivor? Inquiring minds wanna know.
Why do people who have been on Survivor go to the homes of other people that have been on Survivor to watch people on Survivor? One of our listeners asks.
Wow, the word Survivor was said too many times in that question.
Yeah.
So what the question is essentially like, why do alumni go to the houses of other players and watch the current season?
One of our very inquisitive listeners wants to know that.
I mean, you can probably explain better than I can because you're sort of almost... I think someone described it on your podcast before. It's like you're all kind of part of this special league in a way, in that you've all played it. Despite the varying conditions, you've all been part of the experience in some sort of way, shape, or form. And there is a sort of community that builds out of that. And, you know, you've obviously made connections with a lot of people outside of your season. Other people do as well, especially as the pool grows larger and larger. And a lot of these people are still interested in the current seasons, considering how many survivors you get to bring on your podcast each week. So it seems completely legitimate to me. I might have to take fault with the inquiring minds. I don't really see a problem with it.
Well, very inquisitive listener wanted to know. Yeah, I think it sort of like makes it more exciting to watch. Andy Denhard did write a great article about watching Survivor with other people makes it more exciting. But I think then, you know, all the veterans can get together and be like, oh, I can't believe they're doing this on this season. They didn't give us that. What? And you could take a picture with all the people that you're with. So I think that there's probably some sort of psychology there to it.
Yeah. And you know, what sounds weirder, going to someone else's house with other Survivor players and watching the show, or just sort of like sitting alone in your apartment, not talking with anyone else and just watching the show on your own?
Yeah. Especially if you have a crappy apartment.
Exactly. Courtney Merritt. God knows what happened to her, but hopefully she's getting out there to those Survivor viewing parties if she still watches. She can fire dance to entertain them.
Nobody would come to her apartment.
Don't get near Joe if you're fire dancing.
Yeah. All right. Let's take one last question. This is from Craig from Vancouver. Here is Craig.
Hey, Rob. Craig calling from Vancouver, Canada, with a question for Mike Bloom. Now, as everybody knows, Mike Bloom is the one half of the Once Upon a Time post-show recap with the tabulator Kirk Clark. And seeing as he is the expert in all things magic and fairy tale like, I wanted to ask him, of the five players, which fairy tale characters do you think best describes the five players left in the game? Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Mike, is that a title that you really put out there, that the keeper of all things magic and fairy tales?
Yes. I don't know if you knew this, Rob. I'm an amateur freestyle rapper, a podcaster, and I also dabble in the dark arts.
Wow. All right,
there's
Mike.
There's 24 hours in a day.
Could you put a fairy tale character to you, the players from Survivor Go Wrong?
Okay, so I would say Ty is definitely, now this is sort of going to the Once Upon a Time version, but I would definitely call him Rumpelstiltskin. And that the Rumpelstiltskin that's represented on Once Upon a Time is constantly someone who is flipping back and forth between sides. He works in deals. He is operating under a lot of magical principles. So he is very heavily guarded. I could definitely see him conjuring himself up an extra vote or an extra life, if you will.
Yes.
So that one's actually the easiest one. I'm trying to think off the top of my head about some other ones. I mean, let's talk about some qualities from Sydney. She's a little heated, but not, you know, there's enough heat going on in Cambodia.
We don't need no more heat, baby.
But she's very, I wouldn't say flighty, but she's able to sort of jump around to whatever her whim is. So, I mean, I would almost call her like Jack from Jack and the Beanstalk in that, you know, she's ready to like sell, not to sell the cow, but to take the beans and, you know, throw the beans into the ground and climb up the beanstalk and take whatever she needs to. And
is
don't
Scott
check,
Pollard the giant?
Then in that case, I think he just might be. and the golden harp is the super idol. Okay. Aubrey. Okay, so Aubrey is a little more bookish, but she's someone who has her wits about her and is a little feisty. Maybe if we're making a Disney comparison, maybe she's like Belle from Beauty and the Beast. I don't think that would make Joe the Beast. Maybe Neil was the Beast. And instead of being, you know, transformed into an ugly cat creature, Neil was just given the curse of boils on his back. Joe might be like Sleeping Beauty. Just because he needs to be woken up. And when he's woken up, he's really grouchy.
Is Sleeping Beauty very grouchy when she wakes up?
I mean, I'm assuming so. I haven't really read that part of the story, but you have to assume the girl's been sleeping for years at this point. But when you wake up, aren't you a little grouchy?
Depends on what went on. I gotta be honest.
In the dreams, you mean?
No. Depends on how I'm woken up, I guess.
All right, so now who's left? Michelle. Oh, boy. Okay, Michelle's the toughest one because she's not really...
Isn't that the exercise here of, in this fairy tale of Ko Rong, which character is Michelle?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, Michelle is kind of a warrior, and this is a weird comparison, but maybe she's a little bit like Mulan in that, you know, maybe Julia was like her father and she stepped up to fight in her place, and she has a head about her, and she is sort of a little undercover in the alliance. So it seems like, you know, I think she's ready. She's not exactly in with them 100%, assuming that she's going to go flip with Ty. So maybe Mulan is the proper comparison. Maybe I'm thinking so off the top of my head that I completely botched that comparison, but that's what I'm going with for now.
Bro, I know.
All right. Well, Mike, that I'll give you credit at least that this was a very hard thing to do. Maybe not. Maybe even harder than doing a freestyle rap.
That's splitting hairs once again.
Yeah. All right. We had a call from Shut Up Tim before. Are you interested in hearing his musical submission for the week?
Oh, always.
Okay. He was so inspired about what was going on with Ty and the monkeys. Here is Shut Up Tim.
Jason wanted some monkey love. He wanted to get a monkey hug. Jason wanted some monkey love. He wanted to get a monkey hug.
Oh, God. monkey hug sounds like a euphemism for something.
Yeah. The appropriate response, I think that was the
Funk is dead, and it's a lot deader now. I'm sorry Tim.
Okay, you want to talk some Survivor social media?
Always.
All right, here we go. Hit it, Ryan Elder.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than building a fire because we don't need no more heat. Tweets.
Yeah.
We're in the middle of Ko Rong. Like, listen, we don't need no more heat, baby.
That's Sydney's favorite bumper thus far.
No, that was a good one. So props to Ryan Elder at Ryan Elder Music. All right, Mike, let's get into the Survivor social media. Lots of stuff going on from the Survivor players. Your boy, Peter.
Oh, yes.
Bagginstos, your future returnee, Peter Bagginstos.
I'm stumping for him.
Yes. Tell me if this sounds like the words of a Survivor returnee. He says, another Survivor day. Gee. I wouldn't know, but thanks for reminding me 4,000 times over and over, Twitter. Hashtag me generation.
Me generation? Oh, yeah. Is that an insult to the millennials?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Was this a social media takeover by Joe on Peter's Twitter?
Peter, you are biting the hand that feeds you, and you're going to have to treat that infection right after you do so.
Get ready for a takeover!
How do I use this thing?
All right. Dumb me generation.
But you know it wouldn't be Joe Takeover because he'd spell generation with an I at the end. It'd be the I generation.
You know, what's Peter annoyed about that? Too many people are saying it's White Rice Wednesday. Does he follow Jonas?
I think he has FOMO. And I think so many people are tweeting about Survivor that he's like, well, I'm not
FIDMO.
On. Stop.
FIDMO.
You know, FIDMO, yeah. I think he did miss out in this case. The season picked up even more after he left.
Yeah, Peter really getting pretty salty about it.
Definitely.
Yeah. Eliza was very fired up as usual during the episode.
Oh, yes. And I'm assuming the sky is blue as well.
Yeah. Though during the episode, she was tweeting, I am kind of over this season due to Jason. I make mothers rat their sons out. He really grosses me out. Please let him be gone. So this is like Eliza had like one wish last night.
Yeah, well, what did you think about that statement to begin the episode? Jason's talking about how persuasive he is that apparently as a bounty hunter, he convinced mothers to give their sons up.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how that conversation went. Did he just like knock on their door and ask like, hey, can you know Bobby come out and play? And then he traps them then, or did he try to, you know, glamour them into giving up their son's location?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly how the, you know, fine details of bounty hunting goes. I have no idea.
I mean, at least bounty hunting in southeastern Michigan, it might be a regional thing.
Yes. You know, maybe we've seen in Survivor Blood versus Water a daughter giving up her mom, but maybe we need to get this pair that Jason found, get them on a Blood versus Water season, the mother who gave up her son.
Yeah, was that going to be stalking your criminals versus murderers season?
Yes. Well, you don't know what he did. Maybe just like owed like money to somebody.
I mean, if you have a bounty hunter chasing after you, I feel like it's got to be for something pretty big.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know exactly. Again, I know nothing about the industry.
Not yet, at least.
Not yet. Yeah. Okay, then things were getting dicey for Eliza as Jason was getting closer to winning immunity. OMG, Jason is going to win immunity. Gross. Him being on this season makes me want to quit Survivor. Hold on. Doesn't Eliza hate quitters?
Oh, my God. It's making her become the thing that she hates the most. All right. So if Eliza goes onto a Survivor rival season, as you've watched prognosticated, who's her best rival here? Is it Twyla? Is it Parvati? Is it Jason Parvati at this point?
You can't have a rival from social media. Like,
well, they do it on the challenge all the time. I think Johnny Bananas was a rival with someone just because they got in an argument on Twitter.
I guess so. But, you know, Eliza then would have one every season. She could have Andrew Savage as her rival.
Well, Bananas does it. He's able to come back just by hooking up with people and becoming rivals with people. Maybe Eliza's able to make a career out of herself by doing the same.
Eventually, Jason gets voted out. Eliza tweets, yay, I can go back to enjoying Survivor.
So now the question is, is the emotional roller coaster of Eliza done now? I haven't followed her too closely. Is she really stumping for specific people that if they don't do well, she's going to go to town once again?
Yeah, I don't know if she has a horse in the race in terms of I don't think she has anybody that she hates. I think she likes everybody now.
Yeah, so we might see a sunshine and rainbows Eliza, which is not as much of a fun Eliza, but for those that are not fans of her vitriol, I think we're relieved of it for this season now.
Or does it just become next man up? Okay, so who's the person that she's going to be annoyed with?
That's true. So she has to like make a pick almost.
Right. Right. You know,
you should bring
okay.
Eliza on for a preseason podcast where she picks the person that she's going to hate the most.
Right. I mean, I think she has that pretty early on. Like, who's going to sit on the Iron Throne of be the lightning rod for Eliza on Twitter all season?
Well, that Iron Throne will definitely be a lightning rod. There's so much metal in it.
Okay. Let's keep going. Some more people from this week. We have Jervis Peterson. Jervis, always a master tweeter.
And never nervous about his tweeting.
Never nervous. He tweeted about how it's funny until you get to tribal. Damn, Jeff, way to give Joe a reality slap for laughing.
What was this during?
This was when Joe was I spelled the word wrong. And Jeff's like, oh, it's funny until you go to tribal.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I mean, Jeff has been known to sass people, including my future mate on the Challenge 27 Rivals 15, Jonathan Penner.
My ass.
Yeah, exactly. Or Jonathan getting mad at me. But I mean, I think Jeff was definitely snipping at Joe. I mean, Jeff must, it's very hot. We don't need any more heat in Cambodia. Jeff was probably getting a little heated as well.
That is certainly possible. I think that challenge went on a really long time. Like, I really think that went on probably at least 30 minutes.
And I think it's actually interesting coming from Jervis, because Jervis came from Pagong, where, like, in their first vote, they all voted against Jeff to troll him, and he got really, really mad at them. So I think he's used to, like, messing with Jeff for nigh on 16 years at this point.
Also, Jervis tweeted out, "Way to pull out the FU stick at Ty Trang." When did Ty pull out the FU stick?
Well, he had like a Mr. Echo-like stick that carved all the people that he betrayed into it. And I'm assuming that's what he pulls out at the end of every tribal council.
Wow. Okay. All right. Are you ready to play everybody's favorite game? Rupert tweets.
Of course.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert. Tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
It really is a rhetorical question. I mean, we're going to play the game whether or not you're ready.
Exactly. We're sort of on this monorail that's guided magnetically at this point. There's no real getting off unless we happen to find an anchor and throw it into a giant donut.
So my favorite Rupert tweets moment is not in this game, but, you know, sometimes I'll like to check out what Rupert is saying during the episode. And one of Rupert's tweets from while the show was on last night, that he tweeted out that he was banging right through this episode.
What? Oh my God. Well, we already saw, is he doing what he did to his wife when she visited during All Stars that one episode?
So I retweeted this with just the word "whoa" and included that retweet of banging right through this episode.
Did you have a picture of Joey Lawrence next to it? So he did the Blossom delivery of "whoa."
And I actually got a response from Rupert I retweeted that he was banging right through the episode. And he wrote, "I mean that this episode is going by very fast." And I was like, okay, sure. Like, hashtag wink.
What do you think he was going to say? "I meant I'm having sex with this episode." I mean, maybe he really likes wildlife. I'm not entirely sure what exactly would turn him on this late into Survivor. But again, this is a man who dry humped his wife when he won America's Tribal Council. So,
yeah, well, that, look, the heart wants what the heart wants. So,
and the heart wants to sacrifice your game for your wife.
All right, come on. That's Mike. Get your head in the game.
that's next on the chopping block.
All right. So I've got a little bit of a wrinkle for you, a twist. Okay. You ready for a twist in the Rupert tweet game?
Is this a Nature Box twist?
Yeah, it's a twist.
Get ready for a takeover!
What?
All right. Let me, how do I spell out these tweets?
All right, here is your twist. This week, I'm only going to give you one real Rupert tweet.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you three Alexis Maxwell tweets.
Oh, God. Oh, boy. All right, this is going to be tough. I remember when you brought this up last week, Alexis Maxwell is definitely getting into that vague territory, so hopefully I'll be able to discern.
Okay, so these are three Alexis Maxwell tweets. All you have to do is find the one. We talk about Rupert tweets every week on this show. It should be very easy for you to pinpoint exactly the Rupert tweet.
Theoretically, yes.
Okay, here we go. Four tweets, all tweeted out last night during the show. Tweet number one is, "There's a lot of backstabbing in this one."
Okay.
It's number one. Number two, "They were so good at that challenge." Okay. That's number two.
Great, great.
Number three, "This is nerve-wracking." Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point.
Wow.
Three exclamation points. And number four, "Ah, what's going to happen?"
Okay, so I feel like the latter two, even though you did a remarkable job delivering them in Rupert's rhetoric, I don't necessarily feel that his cadence would match those latter two. I don't think Rupert would make a tweet saying, "Ah," unless he was like Charlie Brown. So I'm going to rule out the latter two. So that leaves me with, "They're so good at this challenge." And what was the first one again?
"There's a lot of backstabbing in this one."
I mean, Rupert talks a lot about the challenges, and I'd have to assume that he's talking about the reward challenges, since, like you said, that immunity challenge was a little bit of a struggle bus. So, you know what? Talking to Regis, our voicemail caller from before, final answer, I'm going to go with the one about the challenge.
No, 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 no.
No.
Sorry, Mike.
It's okay. It's okay. I appreciate you dumbing the game down for me, and even then, I still got it wrong. I still got it go wrong.
So what is it?
I'm going to go with my other choice, which was they're all betraying each other.
There's a lot of backstabbing in this one.
Yeah.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
I've zinied myself once again. I should have gone with my gut. After I pooped in the ocean, I should have gone with that first tweet.
Oh, no.
And right now, my gut tells me, go use the bathroom.
Darnell Hamilton, still relevant after all these weeks. 16 Tony nominations. Congratulations to Darnell Hamilton.
Yes, Hamiltony. All right. So, Mike, what a job you've done here on the voicemails today.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope I was able to satisfy. I had a super amount of fun. I always appreciate coming on to talk with you about this. And again, I can't speak highly enough about this season, and I'm super excited to see where it goes in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. All right. Well, great job by Mike Bloom. Of course, you could follow Mike on Twitter. He is at A Mike Bloom type. Mm-hmm. Mike, what do you have coming up? What are you working on these days?
All right. A lot of plugs. I should give him out like a Big Brother eviction shout-out speech.
I've got power strip right here ready for you.
All right. So let's see. I'm going over to post-show recaps. I'm working on Once Upon a Time with Kirk Clark. Always great. Really great season. I feel like best season since the first. As was talked about in another voicemail. Really fun show. So check that out. We're about to finish the fifth season. Check out our reality TV. We're wrap-ups. We started doing Shark Tank coverage for the past few weeks. I've been doing that with an RHAP listener, a new podcaster named Jasmeet Sidhu. It's been a super lot of fun getting to talk about that show from a podcasting perspective. We're covering the next couple of episodes before season 7 breaks in a little while. Survivor Historians, we are going to be recording part 2 of China soon.
Wow.
Really fun season. We're having a lot of fun with it. I that's a season that I absolutely love watching. So check that out. And if you haven't checked out any of our coverage in the past, you dive into it. There are 30 plus episodes for you to enjoy in the time between it takes us to release podcasts. And if you don't want to hear about reality TV whatsoever and you'd rather hear some movie talk, I know AJ Mass talked about this podcast back when he appeared in the middle of this season, but there's a podcast the two of us do called The Hamster Factor, where essentially AJ brings in a movie that I've never seen before. He has, usually it's something weird and sci-fi-esque, and we talk about it. We've talked about things like Donnie Darko and Looper and 12 Monkeys. So just look The Hamster Factor up on iTunes if you want to check that out. It's been a lot of fun, and it's a great excuse for me to watch a bunch of weird movies and try to essentially figure out what's going on with them.
So do check me, boo.
Yes, exactly.
Check me, boo.
Yeah, do check me, boo.
Yeah, I'm gonna negate Cindy on that one, lest she, you know, turn on me later. you know, after the cameras cut, after the cooking show finishes. But yeah, I'd say check out all the stuff that's going on. I'm always grateful for listens and feedback as well. And again, thank you so much for having me on.
Always a pleasure, Mike. And looking forward to whatever we end up doing next. Also, let me just give a shout out to the work that Mike has done alongside with Nina Stoddard. The RHAP Wiki has been, Mike has been a big asset on that. And you don't mind if I give it a plug, right?
Yes. Talk about my big assets all you want.
Yes. So you can check that out. I really haven't talked about it on the podcast yet because I wanted to make sure that we were ready. Go to robiswebsite.com/wiki if you want to see some of the stuff going on at the RHAP Wiki, and what a great resource hopefully it is for the listeners.
Yeah, so essentially it's a compendium of, you know, coverage of past shows, current shows, list of guests, podcasters. It's sort of a self-compartmentalized Wikipedia essentially about RHAP. That being said, it is Wikipedia, so it's almost like crowdsource edited. So I mean, if there are things that you felt should be included, or you know, if there are details that I might have gotten wrong, you could absolutely let me know. Nina Stoddard, as Rob said, has also been a fantastic help on this as well. Definitely couldn't have done it without her. But again, this is Wikipedia. Feel free to make your own changes, but you know, let's use the honor system a little bit here, folks. It is Wikipedia after all. Let's not degrade too much into chaos cast right from the beginning.
Yeah. If you could. Mike, what's the hashtag?
I have Cooking with Sydney up.
Cooking with Sydney. That's pretty good. I had written down question mark the chicken, but let's go with Cooking with Sydney.
I'm like, simmer down.
Yeah.
Because we're going to really push this for Sydney's post-Survivor career.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And hopefully, you know, if anything, we could get a podcast going, a cooking podcast.
I don't know how much, I mean, will it be like she's recording while she's cooking or she's just going to read recipes to us?
Either one. I'm fine with whatever.
You know what? I want to see Sydney on Top Chef, if that's the case. I love Top Chef. I love me some Sydney. The two of them together are going to be like peanut butter and chocolate.
Yeah, I think that's good. And well, what would you do for Sydney, like, who she's like peanut butter and chocolate?
I mean, I would hold on to Mark the Chicken for a week if it meant we got Sydney on Top Chef.
Okay. All right. So
that was fun.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
All right. Great job, Mike. Busy Friday coming up on the podcast. We are going to have exit interview with the latest player kicked off of Big Brother Canada, and then our weekly Big Brother Canada recap. Kevin Martin will be joining me live.
Speaking of poker analogies.
Yes, he will be joining me live at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. He will also be at Run It Up Reno with Jason Somerville later on this month. So you can find out more about that at runitupreno.com. Then Jessica, Elise, and I will be back with our amazing race recap. Last episode before the finale, we'll be live with that at 9:15 p.m. Eastern Time. And then I will have my interview with the host of Big Brother Canada, Arissa Cox, coming up. I will post that as a separate podcast on Friday, and you can get that in your podcast feed when you're subscribed to the podcast.
Are you sure you're doing a podcast? Are you sure?
Yes. Yes. All right. So all that, very exciting. Thank you so much, Mike. Also, thank you so much to the patrons of Rob is a Podcast, without whom all of this nonsense and this malarkey would not be possible.
It sounds like a bunch of malarkey to me.
It is. It is.
That's a good review for this podcast specifically.
Yeah.
Bro, I know.
So you want to find out more about the benefits of becoming a patron, go to robiswebsite.com/patron. Looking forward to reading your comments. I'm sure many of which will be, I think there was too many sound effects on this episode.
Oh, never enough sound effects, in my opinion. Considering Sydney is a sound effects mine, she's her own sound effects board. So really, it's a gold mine.
Yeah. All right. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. I really do. And then next week on the show, we have a really great week of podcasting coming up that we will have Jeremy Collins, the winner of Survivor Cambodia, joining us for the recap. And then I promised it at the beginning of the season that we were getting Bryce on at the beginning so we can get him back on at the end. Bryce Isaiah on the voicemails. Looking forward to reading your comments, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Jason wanted some monkey love. He wanted to get a monkey hug. Jason wanted some monkey love. He wanted to get a monkey hug.